Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It is the coach only, Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons, having a chat first and foremost to Tyrone about Burnley. Because, John Gibbons, before we get, let Tyrone speak, best home side in Europe.
It's a phenomenal record that they've got there. There's been a lot of talk about what it is. I've noticed that Tyrone wrote something today in the paper about the there's a little bit of myth about the pitch size and about you know how small it is, and this idea that the manager Sean Dyche walks up and down before every game just to check it's not too big, you know, and things like that. And they've had to make it a little bit bigger, but I think, you know, what Ty said in his article is it's a little bit of myth that these pitches are actually different sizes. They're all sorts of fairly regulation, really. Some of them just look bigger than others, but they've made it a place that people don't want to go to. They've obviously got in people's heads a little bit, and they're playing very well. They've got good footballers and are making it difficult for people, and they certainly are a force at home at the moment.
On this, very quickly, Tyrone, they've got good footballers. I think this is actually the thing that's not being said enough. These are good footballers.
Yeah, very much so. You know, they are good players. They've brought some decent players in. A lot of them, you know, they spent a lot of money recently. They've spent 13 million on Robbie Gray, but they've got some good bargains in there as well. But, you know, they're probably not getting the credit they deserve. There's a, you know, every team that comes here sort of talks about sort of the direct play and how they're in your face and stuff, which is fair enough, and they use that to their advantage, and they're not going to outpass a team like Chelsea. But they have got some very good players who have improved an awful lot under the manager as well. And like you say, I think they do deserve credit for the way they play. And, you know, they are direct at times when it suits, but they can also play some very good football.
At the back, I noticed he was given man of the match at the weekend. And he was linked with a move towards Everton earlier in the season, because Michael Keane, again, let's stick with the theme of these are good footballers. Michael Keane clearly to me looks like an undoubted sort of top half of the Premier League centre-back, and Burnley at the minute look in and around being a top half side, but he looks, you know, he's been excellent all season, Keane.
Yeah, he has. He's been absolutely fantastic. You're looking at £2 million from Man United, thinking, well, they've got an absolute steal there, and he's one of these who sort of playing week in, week out has helped him and improved him. And the last maybe 12 months or so, back into the Championship and the start of this season, he's come on leaps and bounds. And again, you know, yesterday, I thought he was superb. I thought Mbembe was superb against Costa and, you know, sort of really rose to the physical challenge. You know, Keane, he's everything for a young centre-half. He reads the game brilliantly. He's deceptively quick. He's good in the air. I think he's a huge, huge talent. So he could be an England squad for a long time to come. I think it looks almost inevitable he will leave Burnley in the summer when he only have a year left on his contract. But I don't think he'll be short of options in the Premier League.
I noticed that Chelsea are the latest club to be linked with him. And I think it was maybe only the Metro on Friday, but they were kind of talking about, you know, how Conte will be having a look at him and look forward to kind of watching him a bit closer. And you know, you feel like with Keane, his price goes up every week, really, and every month. Do you know there's a couple more million added than maybe someone like Everton will regret not, you know, paying the money a little bit earlier and securing him, because, you know, I say the price is going up and the teams who are in for him is going up. But it does help him that he's in a proper partnership there, doesn't it? I mean, we've seen at Liverpool the difficulties, really, of chopping and changing a centre-half and how it doesn't help. I think, again, you've done the research, so I don't have to. I'm just reading out your articles, mate. But, but 46 of the last 48 games they've played together there at centre-half, haven't they? And it shows, because they don't make a lot of mistakes, but when they do, they're there to bail each other out.
Yeah, you can tell they know each other's games very well. I mean, it's a partnership that was sort of thrown together at the time at the start of that run. Burnley was playing left back first half of last season, and halfway through when the unbeaten run started, he moved into centre half. And like you said, since I did 46 to 48 league games, they've started together. And there's been a clear improvement in how solid Burnley look in the Championship and in the Premier League since then. They do seem to complement each other. It's a good left foot, right foot partnership. They've both got different traits. So Burnley's not particularly big for a centre half. He's under 6 foot. He's not massively well built, but he does kind of relish a battle and a personal battle, and you know, he likes it when things get a bit niggly, and he enjoys that side of it. Whereas Keane is more of Michael Duff, retired Burnley defender last year, and they played alongside both of them, and asked him in the summer about their relative sort of strength. And he described Keane as a Rolls Royce of a defender, which at times you can sort of see it. He never really looks like he's flustered or like he's out of position or chasing anything to get back into position. It just all seems to come sort of naturally for it. It's like EP is just coasting through games. Well, he's obviously doing anything but, but there's huge talent there. I think I said Ben as well has improved a lot moving to centre half.
Sorry, John, you were desperate there.
It's all right.
I was going to mention the goalkeeper in that. He didn't have a lot to do against Chelsea, and that's testament to the lads who were in front of him. You know, I think there's only really one save that I can think of that he has to make throughout the game.
Did Pedro's goal is the last shot on target that Chelsea have?
And that, you know, that tells you absolutely everything that you know.
That wasn't in his article. I got that from somewhere else.
that tells you absolutely everything about how well Burnley played in general. But again, you know, when you're talking about stability there, there's a goalkeeper who, you know, when you're talking about people bailing one another out, there's a goalkeeper behind them who they know, you know, can make saves, has made saves. And again, if anything's going to relax a set of centre-halves as well, it's knowing that your last line of defence is there for you.
Yeah, you know, he's a very reliable keeper. He's one who, you know, he has made some fantastic saves and a lot of saves, especially away from home in the league this season. But he's another one who's sort of very unfussy. He doesn't make many mistakes at all. You know, his handling's solid. His kicking's usually pretty solid. You know, it's very, very rare that you see him make a mistake that leads to a goal or leads to a chance. And I think the entire back four have got complete faith in him because they've played in front of him, you know, so many games now. That back four's been solid for the best part of 48, 50 games now, hardly changing at all. And it feels like they operate as a complete unit. They all know each other's jobs, where each other needs to be. They all got trust and faith in each other. And I think it's definitely helping defensively.
Moving sort of, you know, looking up the pitch there, the other thing that struck me watching the game was there was something quite targeted about the way in which Burnley had decided they were going to get at Chelsea. They clearly looked at the fact that Hazard enjoys wandering and can be ridiculously effective when he does it. That therefore means Alonso is left with a fair bit of ground to cover, that Kale himself doesn't therefore really want to come out too much. He is very, unlike Azpilicueta, for instance, who's a right back playing at centre half, Kale is a centre half playing at left side at centre half. And it struck me as, you know, watching Burnley repeatedly, sometimes with success, sometimes not, attacking that area. Again, I'll come on to the manager in a minute, but it takes footballers to put that sort of stuff into action, that they themselves were repeatedly clever, and you could see that because they could see it working, they were doing it more and more.
Yeah, you know, it's obviously something they've worked on and mentioned in the week as a way to get at Chelsea, but like you say, it's easy for the manager to say the players have got to put it into action, and they did just that. You know, it's an intelligent group of footballers, and they could see they were getting, you know, they could see they were exploiting that space. Like, they have come inside a lot and, you know, maybe create a bit of room there and make it tricky for a long time for people to block him. And you can see it was an area they targeted, but I think the way they exploited it was clever. It was, watching the game, I found it a really interesting tactical battle. You know, it wasn't a thriller-minute game with endless shots, but it was one of those that felt like a really engrossing game, the way both teams were going about it. You know, first half Chelsea were really good, but it was very interesting the way both sides sort of went about it and tried to exploit the other's weaknesses.
On Robbie Brady, then he gets the goal. It's a brilliant free kick. I mean, I know Jerry Barton was on them before him, and had scored one as well. So I don't know whether they've sorted that out in training first.
You're really interested in how this happens in training, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's my new thing. How does someone come in and go, do you know what? I'm on free kicks, lad, and boss at them.
I'm on free kicks. Well, I spoke to Robbie after the game and said to him, you did well to get that off, Joey Barton. And he said that he put the ball down, and Joey had said to him, we'll see how the wall lines up. that'll check, man. I think Robbie basically said, look, I'm having this. And I imagine he'll be taking all of them from now on.
Yeah, see how the wall lines up. What a lovely passive-aggressive sentence
honestly, the idea of the idea that we think, you know, as football supporters, we think, oh, they've got all this work dealt, and if it's here, he's going to take it, and if it's there, he's going to take it. Whereas really, it's two lads having a slightly passive-aggressive argument in front of a football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then one gets to put it in the top corner, turn around to the other one and say, told you.
it does sort of make sense what he said there, though, Joey, just good to me, because I know when it's something. Sometimes you just kind of fancy your angle of a free kick, and then other times you don't, and it's just completely stupid. But yeah, he's maybe someone was a bit tall, and Joey's thought, nah, I'll swerve it. See how you get on, new lad.
Up front there, when we were mentioning sort of exploiting that space, bypassing midfield, taking a gamble and playing two up, but knowing that was going to stretch Chelsea's second half, especially, it's those lads in attack, working hard, shifting themselves around. Neither of them shirking anything there, either Gray or Barnes. And again, there's that's been another theme all the way through the season is grafting intelligence along the front line and making it just leaving centre halves having had bad afternoons. You know, even if you're not scoring threes and fours, they're walking off the pitch knowing they've had a game.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the pair of them work hard, and they do put themselves about probably in slightly different ways. Sort of Gray's a bit of a terrier, I suppose, constantly chasing things down, trying to get at defenders. Whereas, you know, I mean, Ashley Barnes is interesting. He's a real old-fashioned centre forward, and you know, he's jumping into people, barging them in the back. You can imagine centre halves are coming off after a game against him, just thinking, I never want to see that bloke again. He does give him absolute hell for 90 minutes. And, you know, it's something a lot of Premier League defenders probably aren't particularly used to or comfortable with. You know, it does him a bit of a disservice as well to say he's just that. He's got a lot more about him. And, you know, since he got in the side, he's been really good. But they do work hard. They pressure defences. And, you know, the manager loves playing 4-4-2 and his team sticks to 4-4-2 here. And, you know, in games like that where you've got two up front, you can go back to front quickly and just try and switch the pressure back onto the opposition.
Bringing it all together then, mention the manager there. I'm sure, you know, before the start of the season, let's all be honest, 17th was the target and points are on the board now. It's now the point where I think it's probably fair to say that there'll be huge disappointment when they're at Turf Moor if Burnley don't stay up this campaign. I mean, they've put themselves in a fantastic position. I'm sure the manager is every day drilling into them. Nothing's finished yet. Not until we're mathematically safe, nothing's finished yet. But they're getting closer and closer to it. And you'd be really surprised if it didn't happen now. And it's no more than they deserve across the course of the season.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, it would take something, you know, something to go disastrously wrong over the next 13 games. Now, I think if they were to go down, they're on 30 now, got a 10-point cushion, and probably only need another 6, 7, 8 maybe to stay off, which they'll probably get at home alone, regardless of away games.
Yeah,
they can get an away win. You know, they've done the hard work, but you've got to see it through now. But there's no sign of them sort of feeling the pressure or anything, or getting ahead of themselves. You know, they're asked now every week, are you safe yet? How many more points do you need? It's the same message every time, which doesn't make for great lines, but you know, it makes sense. Mate. It's one game at a time, and you know, we'll be safe. Well, mathematically, we can't go down. You know, we've got 30 points. We need more. It's the same stuff every time. They're not getting carried away. They're taking it one game at a time. You know, it's very hard now to see how they will be dragged into it. I mean, the next three, potentially next four away now, depending on that Liverpool one and whether that gets moved for the FA Cup. But the three, aside from that, they've got Hull, Swansea and Sunderland away next three games. So, you know, I mean, if you lose all three, then potentially you're going to be looking over your shoulders. But they've been getting better away from home. If they just nick a win in one of them, then
yeah,
you know, they're within touching distance, really, of safety, you'd think.
Okay, huge thanks as ever to speak to Tyrone and find out what's happening at Burnley. And one of those three we're going to speak to now, we're going to speak to Gito Clewellyn at Swansea. Thanks, Tyrone. Yep, joined now by Gito Clewellyn. And Gito, I tell you what, I didn't think we'd quite be having this conversation at this stage of the season. It's going swimmingly.
It is, out of absolutely nowhere. We've turned it around. I mean, considering we had 12 points on New Year's Day and we're rock bottom of the Premier League, to now find us halfway through February 15th with double that points total. It's a remarkable turnaround that nobody could have possibly predicted.
I mean, how much credit is the manager get for it, would you say? I mean, he looks the part, he looks like he knows what he's doing, he looks kind of in control. You know, how much of it would you say is down to him?
Yeah, he takes the lion's share of the credit. His impact has been sensational. He's just got it's really difficult to believe that this is the same team that we were watching, you know, letting 3, 4, 5 goals in on a weekly basis under Bob Bradley. He's just got players who look like no-hopers playing with newfound vigour and energy. They look like a team again. They're playing with a shape and a discipline which we haven't had all season, and which I didn't think was possible, really, with this group of players. But he's got everybody just playing on a completely different level to what we saw under the previous manager.
It's funny sometimes, we've said to a couple of the guys we've had on this who've kind of been Swansea fans and talking about Swansea, is that maybe you don't pay as much attention to them as they should, because Swansea's quite far away. It's literally in another country. I don't know if you know that, Gita, but I'm sure you do. But, you know, because it's far away, there's always a little bit going on that you're not quite sure about. And my one for me was Alfie Mawson. I've never heard of him, and apparently he's better than Pelle. I mean, that's some strike, isn't it?
Oh, he's incredible. He is very quickly becoming an absolute hero and the perfect replacement for Ashley Williams. When he was signed in the summer from Barnsley, you know, nobody heard of him really. Yeah. You know, pardon the ignorance. But
well, I still am till Saturday. So, you know.
he's been starting regularly since Clement came in, and he'd shown, you know, glimpses before that he was, you know, potentially a very good footballer. But since Paul Clemens come in, he's just played out for his skin. He's very similar, actually, in many ways to Ashley Williams. He's extremely confident on the ball. He's not afraid to, you know, try out a few risky passes on the edge of his area, and, you know, try a few cross turns to get out of trouble. But he always, you know, his judgment's always spot on. He never gets caught. He knows what he can get away with and what and when to just boot it away. But he's a very good footballer. He's developing defensively very, very quickly. And he's popping up with goals. I think that was his third of the season, which for a defender in his first season in the Premier League is a brilliant one. But he's also got he's got quite an infectious personality. You know, he strikes you as a nice guy and the kind of player that the fans can warm to and relate with. Which again is the kind of thing that we had under Ashley Williams. You know, he's a good guy as well as a fantastic leader and a great defender. And he's still got some developing to do, but he is really coming along brilliantly and filling what was a huge gap in the centre of our defence.
He's got a lovely smile, which helps. He has got a lovely smile. Just on the idea of, you know, the anatomy of a relegation battle. Do you think one of the things that's helped, not just obviously the manager coming in, but the manager being able to turn around and look at his lads on the training field and also say to them, listen, look at who's around us. They look like a bag of rags at the minute. Leicester look absolutely all over the place. Mm-hmm. Middlesbrough, just don't look like they can buy a goal in any shape or form. Sunderland, yes, they score four past Palace, and that tells you how bad Palace are. But on the other hand, Sunderland then go and ship four at home. Do you know what I mean? It the speed with which it looked to me like it just looks too hard for Swansea to the way it looks now, where if anything, you know, you're wondering how quickly you can pull away. Do you think that's helped sort of looking round and going, listen, we may not be great, but if we work hard and we knuckle down, we can be better than these clowns?
Obviously, I mean, if you've got just that confidence that you're better than the teams around you, then that's going to go a long way, which is something we probably didn't have at the, in the first half of the season. We didn't have that real belief that we were actually, you know, not one of the three worst teams in the league.
Yeah.
But a weekend like this, where we're the only team down the bottom who picked up a win, when you beat a relegation rival like Leicester, it counts that little bit more than your regular win. And Leicester were awful, I thought. They really, the difference in style and in attitude between last season and this season, it's shocking. And you know, the kind of things that Swansea fans were complaining about a few weeks ago, I'll be honest, I saw them in the Leicester side, and that has to give our players a boost, and it has to also, you know, sap the energy away from Leicester. But, you know, I wouldn't actually go as far as to say that everybody's, you know, catastrophic down the bottom, because where they're getting their energy from, I don't know. They were unlucky against Arsenal, there's no doubt about that, and they they're pulling off impressive results and good performances too. Crystal Palace they've got the squad to get up to this, but, you know, whether or not they can get everything together remains to be seen. Sunderland always do get out of it. You know, it's no matter how bad they look, you know, they can always pull something off. And Middlesbrough, I think they proved against Everton, they can get those gritty draws. They may not score, but they can get the gritty draws, which just keep them above the relegation zone. So, you know, and of course Leicester are still the champions. They've still got most of their squad there, so there's still potential there for every single team down the bottom to go down or stay up. It's just a matter of who can, you know, get their act together and put together a run of results like the Swans have done in the last 2 months.
Looking ahead, then you're looking in towards March. I mean, that's the critical month of the season, really. Looking at the fixtures lined up, it's before the international break. It's Burnley at home, Hull away, and Bournemouth away. You know, you've got Chelsea away next, and what will be there. I think there's a very good chance you give them a hell of a game. But you know, those three games, if you take 4-6 or even 7 points from those three games in March, then that should by virtue of the fact that you'll stop those sides picking points up as well, that should be defining for you.
Yeah, I mean, Chelsea, like you said, it's a bit of a free hit, really. You know, if anything we get out of a visit to Stamford Bridge is a bonus. So, you know, that's not a game that we're counting on for points, and we're 4 points ahead of the relegation zone now, so we don't actually desperately need a win. But you're right, March, it's full of games. I mean, if current form continues, Burnley, I thought they were very good against Chelsea. I was very impressed by their performance against Chelsea, but they are a different team away from home, and they like Leicester, they still haven't won away. So if we can, you know, if that continues into March, then we fancy our chances of at least getting a draw there. Hull, we don't know what they're going to be like. If they're still playing this way, then that's going to be a very interesting match, but hopefully they'll have run out of energy a little bit by then. Bournemouth, I think, are looking dreadful defensively at the moment, and you know, if they're not going to find the defender that they need between now and March, so again, that's a match which we should be targeting really as a probable win if we continue this form. So it's just a matter of keeping things going. Everything we're doing right at the moment, just keep that up, and hopefully, you know, we can if we keep picking up points at half the rate that we are at the moment, we'll stay up. We've put ourselves in a good position. It's just a matter of, you know, carrying on the good work.
Is there any particular dangers, would you say, for Swansea you're looking at between now and the season? Not necessarily, you know, who you play, but any kind of pitfalls, you know, a one or two injuries that would really cost you in places where, you know, you're not that well stocked, or any kind of, you know, drops in effort or anything?
It's just hoping, really, that this isn't just a new manager bounce, and right, that we can continue. Everything we're doing at the moment, it's heading in the right direction. You know, the defence looks far more solid. We're still, you know, conceding goals, but it does look a lot more solid than it looks like a completely different defence, the one which we had under Bob Bradley. The midfield has a lot more of a shape and energy about it, and we are scoring goals. You know, we showed on Sunday that we were getting goals from all different positions. I mean, the goal scorers were a centre back and a left back. But you know, there's still a few key players. Geoffrey Sigurdsson, what is it? I think he's scored 8 and assisted 8 now this season. And you know, sensational statistics for a player down towards the bottom of the division. Obviously, if he gets injured, or you know, runs out of energy or whatever, that's going to be a big blow for us. But on the whole, it is just a matter of continuing the hard work, continuing the improvement. And think, you know, everybody, you could see the mood has changed around the club. Now fans are a lot more positive. Paul Clement, for the first time, we really saw him, you know, show a bit of emotion yesterday. It showed how much he's enjoying it. And the players all look happy again, which they certainly weren't, say, 2 months ago. So everything's good at the moment. And all we have to do, really, is keep things like this. And we're pretty confident it'll be enough to stay up. So, yeah, just keep on going.
Keep on going, indeed. Keep on trucking, Gito. it's lovely to hear you enjoying your football. I was worried about your mate. So we'll leave you to keep enjoying it. Keep having a lovely time. What's the name of the podcast again, in case anyone wants to listen?
Sorry, what was that?
What's the name of your podcast again, in case anybody wants to listen?
The podcast is called The Jackcast. It can be found on Twitter at The Jackcast, and we should be recording one tonight. And there should be a new one up Monday night.
They're all much happier now than they were 6 weeks ago, lads. Trust me.
Yes,
get stuck and never listen to that. We'll be back with more in a second.
Neil's had to run off, unfortunately, but more than making up for it, I'm joined by Elliot Hackney, who's our resident Stoke City fan from the Bear Pit TV. it's looking good, pretty good at the moment. For Stoke, looking pretty good on the pitch, but plenty of drama off it, Elliot, in the last couple of weeks. I just want to kind of get your perspective on that. We got the West Brom perspective last week, but it has got a little bit messy with Berahino, you know, isn't it? And I think it's kind of shown to outsiders anyway that maybe kind of, you know, the divorce with Tony Pulis, there's still a few kind of ill thoughts there as well.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think personally that Tony Pulis takes very well to Mark Hughes. I mean,
right.
This isn't the first time these pair have had an altercation. I mean, they didn't take hands last time Tony Pulis came to the Britannia Stadium last season. So, you know, this is something that's been rumbling on between the pair. And now it's sort of come to a head with the Berahino story and
yeah.
Charlie Adams. You know, Charlie Adams made comments about Tony Pulis, and now. Still, I don't get what's gone on with this voicemail. Surely Tony Pulis must have had a drink.
Hey, we've all been there.
It must have been. Yeah, exactly. I find it so strange for him to have, you know, called Ryan and then called him a loser down the phone saying he used to be a winner. I find that so strange. And, you know, it's obviously upset Ryan,
sure, yeah.
Because that's the only way it's got out. Obviously, he wouldn't have said anything otherwise. And then it's just gone from there. Tony Pulis since has released statements. He seems to be groveling a bit now. So I think he realises he's done something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, seems to be. And it's just kind of a strange one. And you hope almost for Berahino's sake it can go away, because there's a lot of spotlight on him at the moment. And you can argue how much of it he's brought on himself and things like that. But, you know, as a Stoke City fan, you've signed a footballer, you've signed someone who could be an exciting striker. And, you know, and he still is a young lad. And so you're hoping for his sake that he can just kind of start to, you know, get fit and start to contribute on the football pitch, because he must feel like he's got, you know, drama everywhere he looks.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all that was released the day before by West Brom about the drugs issue that, you know, kept him out of the spotlight at West Brom for the past 8 weeks that he was there, the last 8 weeks that he was there. And, you know, I think Mark Hughes did well to leave him out of the spotlight and didn't even bring him on the weekend. And we didn't need him, to be fair.
Yeah.
And, you know, just give him some time to get back into shape, because for me, I don't think he's all there fitness-wise. And, you know, we've got a 2 week break now with what the infamous warm weather break training.
And where are you going? We're going to La Manga.
We're Dubai.
Oh, bit of class. Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those now. Depending on what actually goes on there, the team could go back and worship. I don't know what actually goes on with these training camps abroad. But, you know, I know how much Charlie Adam loves to drink, and he's seen the extract from Craig Bellamy's biography. But, you know, this is a good chance for Berahino to get some work done, take another week or so out of the spotlight, and then, you know, next we're Tottenham away, which is a very difficult game. But, you know, it'd be perfect for Berahino to make his mark against Tottenham, you know, after the side that courted him so closely,
yeah.
You know, along with us when he was at West Brom.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where all this started, really, wasn't it? So that'll be kind of an interesting parallel, though. Although he will struggle a little bit to get into the team. Peter Crouch, he's one of our boys as well. He's one of everyone's boys, I think, at one point. But we still like him here, and he kind of looks like he's going to go on forever, doesn't he?
Yeah, it just seems that way. Every time you write him off, I think he's done. He just, you know, goes on one of those runs like he has done the past few weeks.
He missed a few at the weekend, didn't he? He probably should have scored at the weekend.
Games. Yeah, I didn't have the greatest of games at the weekend. Probably should have put one or two away. But, you know, he's done brilliantly the past few weeks. He's still going to keep that place for me against Tottenham and be starting up front without a shadow of a doubt. The main thing to take from the weekend's game just gone was how fantastic Ramadan Sabi was, the younger Egyptian talent that we've got. He was man of the match, absolutely brilliant, and he put Joe Allen's goal on a plate for him.
Yeah. I mean, that's exciting for you to see. And another guy who I've seen getting a few headlines from the weekend is Bruno Martins. And I think he seems to hit the ground running and as soon as he joined and kind of still seems to be playing well for me. Formed a good partnership with Shawcross, it seems. Is the talk that he's going to stay? Is there any kind of talk of that at the moment, or are they just seeing how he goes?
There's a clause that we can have him for $8 million in the summer when it comes to the end of his loan deal, which, if that is true, then I expect Stoke City to snap him up almost immediately as soon as they can. He's been an absolute rock for us. He's fine. We finally found, you know, a perfect partner that Robert Hoof used to be for Ryan Shawcross and Bruno Martins, and he's been absolutely solid, and it's still baffling to think he's 24. He looks about 35. 24, that lad. And, you know, it'd be great to get a sort of younger talent in to sort of shore up the defence of Ryan Shawcross and hopefully become a rock-solid partnership for a couple of seasons to come.
Yeah, I mean, 8 million just seems like a steal. I think there'll be a few clubs looking at him at that price. It seems a decent addition for a lot of teams, really. But I suppose if he's enjoying his football at Stoke and he's enjoying it there, then, you know, he's someone who's moved around a lot, so there's no real reason for him to kind of look to move, you wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, the only worry that there is for me is he did an article recently with the local newspaper and he says he just missed living by the sea. There isn't much sea in Stoke-on-Trent, put it that way. Yeah. That's the only worry for me. That he's mentioned previously that, you know, all three parties have got to come to an agreement, which is Porto, himself and Stoke.
Yeah.
And like I say, if other clubs have got the chance to snap him up for 8 million as well, you imagine there will be other people sniffing around because he has really been a rock for us. But hopefully we can keep him. I'd love us to keep him, and hopefully, you know, after what he's seen from Stoke fans and, you know, how much we love him, then he stays.
Yeah, hopefully for you guys he will. I mean, I feel like I always ask you about Joe Allen, but then he keeps scoring, so I've kind of got to. I saw an amazing stat before that every one of his shots this season's been on target, which is absolutely incredible. He scored big goals for you this season, hasn't he? It's not just kind of weighing in with, you know, the third and a 3-0 win. He scored big goals for you guys, and he just seems to really be another one who's enjoying his football as well. Obviously, he's enjoying playing. Every week he's enjoying, you know, not quite having a team built around him, maybe pushing it, but, you know, a team that, you know, he knows his role in and suits him. And yeah, just you know, running out of positive words to say about him, I think, really.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the past couple of games, he hasn't been on it as he has been previously, but, you know, he's still putting away some goals, he's still chipping in where he can. Some Stoke fans are a little upset that, you know, the rise of Joe Allen in that number 10 means that we've lost those.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, Joe Allen's been playing absolutely vital goals, but we all know that he's not really a number 10, if you know what I mean. He's just taken that position and done really well with it. And, yeah, you know, that because of that, we've seen Bojan unable to get a game and he's gone out on loan to Mainz. And that could probably be the end of his Stoke City career, which would be a real shame because he hasn't... You know, Marky promised him some game time over the Christmas period and gave him 45 minutes against Wolves in the FA Cup and dragged him off. That wasn't really game time. And a lot of Stoke fans are, you know, still quite upset that Bojan's been let go because he's still got so much to offer. And I don't think we've really seen him have a decent run in the side. So Joe Allen has been absolutely unbelievable. And, you know, we can't speak highly enough of him. He just keeps on doing it. But we're just wondering if we're going to see him drop back anytime soon, you know, back to where he's used to playing in the central midfield. And, you know, we've got Afellay who can play as a number 10 as well, who's so calm on the ball. And it's just how long before Joe Allen does get dropped back. You know, he could go on a barren spell and not score for 6 or 7 games now. But will Mark Hughes persist with him as a number 10?
I mean, it feels like you've got a little bit of room to kind of experiment between now and the end of the season. Whether Mark Hughes sees it like that is another thing, obviously. And I know every Premier League position is worth quite a lot of money these days. But in terms of what Stoke could do between now and the end of the season, you're ninth in the table, but it's 9 points behind Everton, which will be really, really tricky to claw back with them playing so well, who are in seventh. And then it's actually 16 to Manchester United in sixth, which is, you know, pretty much insurmountable. And so, yeah, bearing in mind, you're not going to get dragged in. You sat there on 32 points. It does feel like there's maybe a little bit of an opportunity to look at some younger players or to look at, as you say, Allen in a different role, give Afellay a run there because we haven't really seen his full potential yet. Do you think he'll look at it like that, or do you think it'll just be, you know, they want to get as many points as possible?
I think he'll, knowing Mark Hughes, I think he'll go for as many points as possible. And towards maybe the end of the season, the last couple of games, you know, we've got a difficult home tie to Arsenal, what we always seem to do well in there. We've got Southampton away last game of the season. We might see a few of the youngsters maybe tried out then. We've had Julian Ngoi, who's come on and had a couple of bright appearances. So maybe, you know, he might get another chance. We've got another bright prospect in Verlinden, who's in the youth side, but he's just recently got injured. He was making the bench a couple of weeks in a row. But for me, I think Mark Hughes takes the league very seriously. I think he'll keep it the usual, keep it pretty steady for the, you know, the formation he's going to want to go into next season with for the rest of the season. I think he needs to start bedding that in because we haven't had a clear formation or a clear sort of tactic to throughout the season. We had three at the back and played Mamadou on the wing. We're now back to four at the back with, you know, two holding midfielders and Crouch up top alone. So, you know, it'd be nice to see Mark Hughes stick with something and sort of ride it out what he wants to go into next season with, so the team are used to it, and then we can hopefully, you know, improve on some of the positions where we've got someone who isn't as strong. But like I said to you probably the last time I was on or a couple of times previously, we're going to finish ninth, aren't we? Season,
it's what you do. It's what you do. Okay, we'll leave it just there. We'll speak to Ellie maybe the end of the season when you are rock solid in ninth, and we're going to laugh about that. But huge thanks to Ellie Hackney and to everyone who's contributed to this week's show. That is being the Coach Home.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.